the volume.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Monday morning Colin Cowherd Podcast. Good one today. Really good one today. Greg Olsen, three-time Pro Bowler at tight end, and Jenkins and Jones. We'll talk about the NBA All-Star Game. And I want to start on the Blake Griffin. He got released. He's now going to be a member of the Brooklyn Nets. You know, it's interesting. I would never deny he was a great athlete. He never did a thing for me as a player. I didn't think he was fluid. I thought he was stiff. It took him forever to figure out the jump shot. I never trusted him at the line. He's the classic example, Blake Griffin, to me. Great athlete, but I never consider him a great basketball player. Chris Paul's a great basketball player, not nearly as great an athlete. And I think sometimes we fall in love with that. It's high-flying, slam dunk. Blake Griffin was just a highlight reel. But what I like about Zion Williamson, I see nuance to his game. Now the Pelicans are letting him bring the ball up the floor and direct the offense. I don't worry that he's not a very good defensive player because most of the NBA is not a very good defensive player. But, I mean, Blake Griffin will help Brooklyn. He's some more points. I mean, he's a big, strong athlete. But, you know, he was one of those I really feel right about is that I used to call him the NBA's best pro beach volleyball player. He was good for dunks, and that was about it. I remember going to a Clipper game one time, and we made eye contact as I went behind the bench, and he gave me a dirty look. And I kind of shrugged my shoulders like, hey, learn to hit a free throw. That's not my problem. But I do think if you look at guys like Chris Paul, Pelicans' best record, Chris Paul was there. Oklahoma City trying to tank. They get to the playoffs. Chris Paul was there. You look at the Phoenix Suns, a mess. No playoffs last 11 years. Now, excellent. Chris Paul is there. And let's be honest, when he got to the Clippers, they were a mess. He took all the heat for the Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, Chris Paul struggles, but he made him a playoff team. And this is the first time we've thought about Blake Griffin since he and Chris Paul broke up. Chris Paul's the much better winning basketball player. Blake Griffin is just a great athlete. I think he'll help Brooklyn, but I would never trust him in a big spot in the postseason. Never did before, wouldn't now. We'll have Greg Olsen, three-time Pro Bowler, coming up in about 30 minutes to take us inside the Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson mess, and it officially is a mess. He played in Seattle last year. In fact, I talked him into it, and it's now a regrettable decision. It was down to Buffalo and Seattle, and I talked him into Seattle. He'll be joining us in 30 minutes. But first, Jenkins and Jones. Well, my guests today are the architects of the modern internet. They've turned Twitter into an art form, well-versed in everything from the NBA, music, monsters of the deep philosophy. And we're so damn happy to have them at The Volume. We found them. I was 9 months ago as I started this project. I called up a friend of mine and I said, I want something totally different. I want something that I don't know about, but they're new and fun and outspoken and smart and knowledgeable. And he said, I want you to listen to Jenkins and Jones. And so I fished it down on the internet. And 10 minutes later, I called him and I said, shit, we got to get these guys. And we are happy to introduce them. LeJethro Jenkins, Dragonfly Jones, and Gardy B. First of all, are those your government names?
You think my mom would name me LeJethro? You think my mom doesn't love me? You know, I'm taking this personally right now. Hell no.
So every kind of brand is built on something. Apple's about innovation. Michael Jordan, competitiveness. LeBron's like, he can adapt to anything. Every brand has a different feel. So when you created your podcast, what was the goal? What did you want it to be?
I don't really think we even thought about this much. I just think we didn't want to talk about things we didn't give a fuck about. You know what I mean? We just wanted to be able to be ourselves in our conversations. You know what I mean? I think our superpower is like relatability. Like, we are so regular. What you get on the podcast, you're going to get that in real life. You know what I mean? Like, we were sweating, arguing about peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in our group chat before you took it to the pod. You know what I mean? Like, so we're talking about brine, peanut butter and jelly, rat versus squirrel, whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? This is who we are. You're going to really get that. You know, we are ourselves on camera or on what is this, radio, podcast, whatever you want to call it.
When you, you know, you guys just kind of go and you don't have like it's again, you guys kind of all riff when you do it. And do one of you consider yourself a lead? The relationship between all of you, Gardy, you kind of feel like sometimes you're making sure the thing doesn't go off the rails.
I'm a pass first point guard, Colin. You know what I mean? I have two shooters that average 37 points a game. So my job is to get the ball up at half court without turning it over and find someone open on the wing. You know, I wouldn't say
you're better than Eric Snow. You're better than Eric Snow. That's what we talk about right now, dog.
I'm Lonzo.
There we go. There we go.
You know what I mean? Like, I'll pull some rebounds down occasionally, but
when you guys are well known LeBron guys, and I always think of myself as I always love LeBron. I just think he's the great evolver. He was doing threes 12 years ago, and you know, it's like the league, he was into analytics before the league was doing it. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested, and Dragonfly, we can start with you, your thought on how does Durant copying LeBron? Like, it's like LeBron moves and then KD goes to Golden State. And then LeBron moves and KD goes to Brooklyn. Do you feel, I mean, we know he's sensitive. We know the burner accounts. He's got an Aaron Rodgers thing where his feelings get hurt. He can be passive aggressive. Dragonfly, start with you. Do you feel he's copying? I mean, I kind of feel a little bit like he, in a weird way, LeBron is sort of his like spirit animal of basketball. He's just kind of watching LeBron carve out his career and following it.
I don't think that KD is necessarily following LeBron. I think that LeBron has shifted the whole landscape of the NBA as far as player empowerment goes. I think KD is just a guy who everyone wants to play with. So that's why, you know, we're seeing the flocking.
It's kind of like Brooklyn, the whole league is following LeBron on that, though. I agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but Kevin Durant has said that, you know, LeBron was the one guy who he's always been chasing to. So there's always that to factor in. But I mean, I don't think that KD is necessarily making these moves to get in LeBron's way. I think that LeBron's way is the way to a ring. So, you know what I mean? Like, I don't necessarily think it's a personal vendetta type thing going on.
Do you respect KD?
Yes. But see, the thing about KD is I think KD truly does not give a fuck about what we think about him. And I say that because even when he was doing like his burner activity, if you always looked at it, he was always defending his move to Golden State. He was never defending himself as a Hooper, right? Never defending himself as, no, KD's actually a cool guy. It was just, how can you blame him for leaving the situation for a better situation? Right. That was all that KD's burner account was about.
I don't think anybody has ever had it. Has he had to like defend himself as a Hooper? I don't think you can really question KD as a Hooper.
KD has never been like, oh, y'all sleeping on KD. KD is nice. No, he's like, how can you blame me for going to Golden State? That was
his saying. KD has never had to defend himself to me as a Hooper. Like KD, like is, if like I've always said this, if God made a Hooper, it's Kevin Durant. You know what I mean? If y'all want a Hooper, here's a Hooper. I don't think he's had to defend himself in that way. It's the decision that people have been questioning, not whether he's good or not. That's why everybody's so mad, because he's so good. And then he went to the Warriors. You know what I mean?
The Colin Cowherd Podcast, proud to be presented by FanDuel. Never played FanDuel Fantasy before? Great. FanDuel is offering users the chance to play free. No deposit required at all. Plus, for those folks who want a deposit, FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with their 20% deposit match. Why do you play on FanDuel? First of all, FanDuel Fantasy, easy to use app. Take 5 seconds. Pick a new team every game. Compete for top cash payout. For new users, FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with their 20% deposit match. So just go to FanDuel.com/Cowherd. That pays the bill for us. FanDuel.com/Cowherd for more info. FanDuel.com/Cowherd. They know we sent you. FanDuel, more ways to win. I think it's funny, though. I've said this for years. A baseball player can go to the Yankees, and it's just a money grab. Yeah. CC Sabathia didn't even want to go. He just wanted the money. He literally didn't want to go. And a football player can just go, Odell Beckham, you know, like, no, I think he got traded, but I've seen guys, we know guys that have just gone for the money. I think at one point Mike Wallace was a Steeler receiver, went to the horrible Dolphins. It was a money grab. I didn't have a problem with it. But if an NBA guy goes, oh my God, people freak out. And I'm like, who wants to go on 41 road trips a year with a shitty team? What's a terrible life? It's a winter league. You get in at 3 a.m. It's horrible. Have you guys ever thought less about a player that did leave? Like, I don't understand why Bradley Beal just doesn't move. I've been saying this for 5 years. I think he's the most underrated, under-talked about guy in the league. And I know LeBron loves him. I know for a fact LeBron is a huge fan. But has there ever been a guy in the league that left and went somewhere and you thought, oh, that's kind of a sellout, a little bit of a sellout?
I mean, I was mad at the KD decision, but I understood it. He's leaving middle America, go to the West Coast, better weather, to a, he's doing less work and getting, you know, better results. You know what I'm saying? Like, if your buddy did the same thing, you're congratulating him, right? You know,
I looked at it that way. All four people on this podcast have made a business move similar to that. Like, I'm going to go to a better situation for better money with a job easier and more fun, right? Like,
an easy
decision to defend. It just, as a basketball fan, it changed things to where it was a little less exciting.
But we've all done that. I think 40% of America, this is a stat that's staggering, never leaves their area code. Think about that in America.
Fact, for real?
40% of America never leaves 20 miles from their home. So you guys, we all look at mobility different. I just look at it like, go. What are you, crazy? If I was a pro athlete, I'd be bouncing all over the place. Right. But half of America doesn't think like that. They're literally, so I kind of look at it like, you know, with Joey Taylor and I, we always joke about it. I'm like, I can't even imagine like growing up in a town and going on the air on that town and never considered better weather or moving. I don't even understand it. But then I come across as some like coastal elite and I'm like, I just chased the commerce. Wherever the commerce was, I went. I mean, seriously.
Wherever the money at? You know what I mean? Like, where the money reside, that's where you at. You feel me? I respect it.
I don't even understand the argument. I don't understand the counter argument to that.
Right.
You know, it's all right, for my audience listening, I found these guys about 8 months ago. I was putting together the podcast network, and so people dropping in on the podcast today, and I told Michael Klein, was a guy I'd just been introduced to. I said I wanted to create a podcast network with about 8 podcasters. I just wanted different, passionate, make me laugh. And so these guys, he told me, you got to listen to this. So I went and found him, listened. I called back and I'm like, boom, this is exactly what I want for my podcast network. I want to find 8 of this. So let me turn it on you. When you guys got a call, because I'm like, to you guys, I'm an old head. Like, I mean, come on, man, I'm at like 50. So when you heard, hey, he's doing a podcast network, be honest with me. What was your first thought?
Where the money reside? Like, you chasing the commerce? We're on the same page. You feel me? I didn't leave St. Louis, my whole family, to come to LA. You know what I mean? Like, if the money wasn't there, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, but I mean, it was a great opportunity. But yeah, I mean, that's what we were on. That's what I was on.
Because Nick Wright knew you, Dragonfly. So Nick Wright, I told him, and he's like, "You got to be kidding me." And I'm like, yeah, they're great. Have you heard them?
Nick's my guy, man.
I was like, it's hysterical. It's so funny. It's so smart. It's so different. And I don't know how he got turned on to you. What do you make of all you guys? Dragonfly, we can start with you. I always feel like you get a gift. Like Tiger Woods was a gift to me. Ten years changed my viewing habits. Just a total gift in my life. I'm a sportscaster. I'm looking for goosebumps. That's all I care about. I want goosebumps. And I kind of feel like LeBron, it'd be a shame if I was born today and I didn't get to watch it. You just watch YouTube. You're like, you don't really understand the Golden State series. You don't really get it. When was the first time? Because remember, when he first came into the league, he was not as finessey. He was not as clever. He was just a freight train. When did you like go all in? When were you like, oh my God, this is probably the best player of all time?
Game 5, 2007 versus Detroit. Those 25 straight. This was back before the social media days. So I was like calling all my friends like, y'all see what LeBron is doing right now. And that was the moment where I was like, yeah, this guy is one of those ones. 2007 versus Detroit, Game 5.
I remember that. Were you bothered, all you guys on this, were you bothered when he left Cleveland, the decision?
Hell no.
Not at all. Not at all. You know what I mean? I mean, the opportunity for him to go to Miami, I thought he'd get a chip there. That's what I wanted. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to see him with Wade and Bosh. I wanted to see him with players around him. You know, he was dragging bums for like the what? How long was it with Cleveland? What, six, seven?
Seven.
7 years, you know what I mean? So I wanted to see him with some guys that have a chance to really win a chip, you know what I mean? And not some cute chip when he's at the head of the league with, you know, the best record, but there's no way he's winning a chip with those guys he had. You know what I mean? Okay.
What's the
best player on his team?
I would just add, like, Bronzy, almost the exact same age as the three of us. So I was literally that 2007 that Tyler was talking about, that was the exact same moment for me. And I was at a house party with my friends because we were about to graduate college. Like, so we were all in this big house watching the game together and everyone's going crazy. So it's my whole adult life that he entered the league that we've been rooting for him. So when he went to Miami, that felt like, it felt like my friend getting a better business opportunity. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't just because I didn't care anything about the Cavaliers. It was just like, oh, look, he's going to go do this. And he made this team that's going to be really exciting to watch.
What do you think he was the goal?
Yeah. Imagine being upset at LeBron for what he did to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, I cannot fathom that. That's just something that's not in me, man.
All right, let's go around left or right. We'll start, Lajathra, with you. All-Star game tonight, your takeaway besides Steph being that's such a ridiculous.
I mean, what else you want me to say? Steph's he's a robot. Like, I thought it was going to be a tough year for Steph. I think we all kind of did. And I think he's just, like, I've been so impressed. I've always been a fan of Steph, but I never really rooted for him because, like, the LeBron shit. I'm rooting for Steph, man. I love him. And, like, to see him play this way, I mean, I'm glad we're getting more Steph being Steph, even though KD left. I mean, he's been a blast. And I mean, this All-Star, he's automatic. Come on. When we talked about other than Steph?
No, I feel he's the most disrespected star of my lifetime in any sport.
Really?
I don't. Again,
he's loved. I don't.
Well, no, he's loved. But you.
I feel like so much of the disrespect for Steph comes from people who hate how much he is loved, though. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, a lot of people just come at Steph's stands like, you're way too high on this guy. Like, that's where a lot of Steph.
We're talking about Steph's stands. We're not talking about Steph. Like, we know Steph is great. You know what I mean? Right.
Yeah, but there's a lot. You've heard these players sometimes. Like, I made the argument 3 years ago. If you'd have polled players, they like Westbrook way more than Steph. And I was like, Westbrook's under 6'4" and can't shoot. Like, I don't get it. Like, I don't get. Like, I just think because Steph's not physically imposing, you know, like alphas like alphas. And I think sometimes Steph is seen as kind of finesse.
He's a little and aloof. Cool. Yeah, I think, yeah.
But also he's winning games shooting 37-footers and seawalking and shimmying on the whole league. I don't know if I necessarily like him as much if I was playing against him either when he's embarrassing me. And he's not just beating me. He's embarrassing me in front of my family and friends.
Right, you know right. I mean? The dude will put a three up and turn to the opposing team's bench before it drops and talk shit. So I can understand.
The 12th man. The 12th man is getting shit talk. He hasn't seen the court. And Steph staring him in his eyes at the end of three. I can see why they wouldn't mess with him. But, I mean, as a fan, the dude is a dog. Yeah, and there's no way to dispute that.
Analytics are funny. Like, I'm a fan of analytics. I do think aesthetically I miss Zion style. I miss Barkley. I miss Zion. I miss Karl Malone. I like guys that create conflict. The league's a lot.
Oh, yeah, bully ball is beautiful, man. I love bully ball.
I like it, too. I miss it. I like physical. I like in baseball. I like play at the plate. In football, I love seeing guys lit up. And in basketball, I love guys going to the rim and just collision at the rim. I love it. I think aesthetically, the league's a lot of threes. That's the reality of it. It's math. But I've always had this theory that I call it manalytics, not analytics. I like analytics. I get it. I'm not stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
But these are men. Don't turn them into code. Don't turn them into numbers. Like, sometimes you just got to say to a dude, Dame, I don't care what you've done. Just take the game over. 4 minutes left. Take it over. If I said analytics, you buy it. You're into it. You're a little cynical. I had Daryl Morey on a couple of weeks ago, and he even acknowledged there are some analytics that he said, you know, you can make arguments whether they win games. Like, plus minus doesn't really mean anything. That's ridiculous. Analytics to you, fan or not, like old school, new school? Where do you land on that?
Who wants to go first?
I absolutely do appreciate analytics, but my problem with analytics is the problem I have with every other fan base, every other, I guess, denomination of how they approach the game is where are you examining the eye with examining the game with a critical eye, or are you examining the game with a pessimistic eye, right? Are you looking to point out, things that can be improved, things where plays are struggling, just out of good faith? Are you doing it to kind of shit on the game, and are you not having fun at all with your with the way you're analyzing things here? So that's where I'm at with it. Like, you can tell when someone is criticizing shit and you know they love the game and it's their passion. You can tell when someone's pointing out shit when they're shitting on someone, and I can't ride
when it's taken away from the beauty of the game. I'm not messing with it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I'll look at analytics and find them delicious. I'm a finance major. I kind of like numbers. I'm geeky. You feel me? But
yeah,
you know, when it's taken away from the beauty of the game, when, you know, from basketball, like, why? Like, when it seems like you're not a fan of basketball anymore, you know what I mean? I don't want that. Like, don't take away from the beauty of what basketball is. You know what I mean?
I just think, but you have a hard time convincing me that, like, the Warriors teams at their peak, that that's not a more beautiful form of basketball than 85, 77. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I do think there's always a balance of what the numbers say is the most efficient way to do things and the sport as a product, right? As something that they have to draw people to. Baseball is deadening the balls up this year because it's too much home runner strikeout. Right.
That's right.
People criticize Floyd Mayweather for being too defensive. People criticize James Harden for no one wants to come and watch free throws. So I do. I mean, I think that's part of it. And I think that because American sports are so business driven, we don't talk about that in soccer. That's a concept on the global stage. If you win, but you play boring, everyone hates you. We don't give a shit if you won. Right. You didn't play the game right. We didn't want to watch it. And in America, it's like, well, they succeeded, so I'm not allowed to be mad at them. But again, it's not like this is not a boardroom discussion. It's sports. You're doing it in your free time on a Saturday afternoon. So if someone wins, but it's boring, it's okay for you to hate it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I mean, listen, I grew up with Magic and the Lakers. And it was, you know, it was Kareem was unstoppable. You got guard, inside out basketball. But I don't think those guys were nearly as athletic. Like, I just don't think they were. You know, I've always said this about Jordan's Bulls. They really weren't. It wasn't an offensive team. It's the best defensive team I've ever seen. It's the longest team. Like, if you turn the lights off and put that Bulls team in with anybody except the Pistons, they'd come out. It was the toughest team. I mean, Ron Harper was a badass.
Dog.
Rodman. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were all just like, that was the tough. Now, Detroit was different. Mm-hmm. Detroit's the scariest team. I mean, Detroit would just get after you. They were cheap. And the Bulls were too talented to be cheap because they all made, you know, most of them made good money. They were just too gifted. They were artists. They weren't going to screw guys up. Mm-hmm. Detroit didn't care because outside of Isaiah, they didn't have a ton of natural, you know, it was Mahorn and Lambeer. And it was like they all looked like tight ends. But I do think I think I like conflict at the rim. That's what I love. For instance, I love Zion. Mm-hmm. I love Zion. I know he doesn't play defense. I know his mid-range game needs work. Your thoughts on Zion, guys. What do you see? What do you like?
Dunk on everyone, man.
That young man is right. That young man is getting 25 points per game, 3 feet away from the rim.
60%.
I'm not sure if we really need to work on anything at this stage. Just, you know, but the thing is, we really do not know how to evaluate players until the playoffs, until, you know, we get coaches who are, you know, committed to scheming for 7 straight games against guys like. Like we saw with Giannis, you know, phenomenal, 2-time MVP, but in the playoffs, you know, there's a blueprint on him. Slow the game down, take the full court away from him, take the transition away from him, you know, make the game a half court game and clog up the driving lanes. So we've got that scouting report on how to stop Giannis now. But, you know, guys like Zion, who are 2 years in, I feel like, yo, keep doing what you're doing. That's getting you 25 a night. And then we'll work on the other shit, you know, when we get the time as a secondary option here.
The question is anyone going to figure out how to stop him? I mean, like he's not just doing 25. Like he got more than that on more than his average shooting against Rudy Gobert, mm-hmm. who's supposed to be the defensive center in the league. Right.
Punishes Rudy regularly.
He eats him. I mean, Rudy's dog food.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, that's the question. Giannis is, it's easier to apply a team defense, but no one's throwing three dudes at a center, you know, in the league anymore. And like Lonzo can make wide open three pointer. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know that we'll see people really commit to stopping him like that.
I don't think there's really a blueprint for Giannis though. Like, he just can't shoot free throws. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's his big issue. If he shoots free throws, there's absolutely no way you can stop the man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, that's how I feel about him, you know?
Yeah, I always feel like the greatest players I've ever seen in my life, you can't marginalize them. You couldn't Michael, you couldn't Kobe, you couldn't Magic, you couldn't really Bird, you can't LeBron. I feel like there's a way to defend Giannis. I don't think there was ever a way to defend Kobe. You know, for me, I look at Giannis and I'm like, I watched Kawhi a couple years ago. I'm like, oh yeah, that's the book. I know it sounds ridiculous, but I watch him and I'm like, late in games, I just don't feel any. I don't trust Giannis late in game. 4 minutes to go, I don't want him with the ball. Is that too harsh?
No, 2 years ago he was hiding. You know what I mean? Middleton was the guy that had the ball in the end of the games. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I don't think it's too harsh. I think he just needs to learn how to shoot free throws. He's not going to hide as much. But, I mean, you can't stop him getting to the lane. You know, Giannis doing Giannis things, that's unstoppable. But, I mean, if you can get a hand on him and foul him, you know, you never know what you're going to get at the free throw line. You know what I'm saying? So, I think that's his big issue. He doesn't need to shoot threes. He's hit free throws, you know?
All right, we do rapid fire. Now, for this brief segment, I'm going to call you by your real names. Okay, we're not doing the band names here.
Okay.
And let's start with you, John. Rapid fire. Worst uniform in the NBA is...
Miami City Editions? Everybody loves them, but they're so ugly to me. They're horrible. They're so... I mean, it's too colorful. You're putting that on your body?
I'm not me? Putting that on my body. Personally?
Yeah, you?
If I'm making NBA bet minimum, hell yeah.
I know, I'm putting anything on my body at that point. You know what I mean? I'll put a dress on it. You pay me $1 million. You know what I mean? I'm just saying. I would not choose those jerseys. You feel me?
All right, Mike, if Jenkins and Jones were an NBA Jam duo, they would be...
Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning with the starter jackets.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That is so 92.
My guys.
Those are like our golden years.
Fire, yes, Mike. Totally, I love it.
Yeah.
Tyler, the single best follow for you on Twitter is?
Tyler Ryan.
Okay, fair enough. Mike, the word that best describes your hometown of Long Beach is?
Grimy. We're grimy, Colin. You know, we got drug dealers, we got rappers, we got millionaires and Olympic sailors. We got everything you want. We got
a lot of Crips, a lot of Crips too, a lot of Crips. Only
Blue
Crips.
City. We got rolling 20s and we got Sylvester Stallone. I mean, it's everything you want, city by the sea.
Yes, sir.
Tyler, if you hosted my show, The Herd, tomorrow on Fox Sports 1, your opening monologue would be...
Oh, Steph is like the prototypical perfect all-star game player. Like, I was watching him play Sunday night, and I was like, this dude is the perfect all-star game guy. Ridiculous handles, ridiculous range, can pass his ass off. Like, that's everything you want in someone who's going to show out in an all-star game. And that was, like, my big takeaway from that game. Like, Steph is fucking perfect for this.
Mike, the animal that would get absolutely owned in the animal combine is...
A human being. For dead last
sure.
In everything except math.
Cooked.
I have a 20-pound cat named Pablo who would not succeed at anything, Colin. I'll put Pablo as the last place sub Tom Brady combine performer.
Well, we love having you on. I appreciate you guys coming on late. This airs obviously Monday morning. It's for you guys. It's now you guys, one of you is out east. One's in Long Beach. One's in Big Bear right now, right?
Yeah, that's me.
Big Bear. Mike, where are you?
I'm in Long Beach, and then Tyler's in Richmond, Virginia. So we're both hometown boys. Oh. You were talking about the zip codes. You know what I mean? We travel. We do get around. But Tyler and I are both holding it down for Richmond and Long Beach.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. We really do. We feel so lucky to have you. I wanted to bring you on and kind of introduce you to people that listen to our show or my show. I've been doing this for 30 years. I think you're great. I think you're smart. You're funny. You know your stuff. You're totally passionate. I just feel we're just totally lucky. It was funny when I called you, when I called Michael, I said, Michael, these guys are great. I said, do you think they would like take the call? Like I'm an old head. Like, I'm not sure these guys would be like, Cowherd. Oh God, Jesus, hell.
We're internet old though. We're internet olds, I would say, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely. If you're not 24 on the internet, you're old. So yes, yeah.
We're all the same old out here, Colin. You know right, what I mean? Right, we get called old by everyone who follows us too. So it's all great.
Guys, I appreciate it. I'm going to keep retweeting all your stuff. Just watch at The Volume Sports, Twitter and Instagram. They're going to be all over it for the next couple of years, hopefully longer. And I appreciate it, guys.
Appreciate you, man.
Appreciate you, man.
All right, man. All right. Last week was crazy in the NFL. The NFL was never really a transactional league like the NBA. And suddenly in the last couple of years, it has been. Quarterbacks are speaking out. They want more control. Don't blame them. Their careers are short. Their legacies are framed on who their coach is and in winning in the postseason. And Deshaun Watson's not happy and Russell Wilson's not happy. And I thought it was a perfect time to bring on somebody I've known for over a decade. He was a great player for the Miami Hurricanes, then Carolina, Chicago, and Seattle. And he's my friend Greg Olson, who is now joining us, part of Fox Sports as well. First of all, if it looks weird as we're looking at each other, I'm in a hotel because I bought a house. It's not ready. I sold a house. They're in. So I'm by myself for 3 weeks in a hotel. It's the most depressing. You're a family guy. It's awful. It's so terrible.
You're watching like random college football games behind you, like Big 12 basketball, Big 10 basketball, or whatever it is.
I've been reduced to caring about Air Force basketball. That's what my life's become. You know, it's interesting. You spent last year in Seattle, and I thought of you during the entire kind of fiasco last couple of weeks. And I've always had this sort of theory that tension is part of life. My wife and I have tense weeks. I've had bosses there's tension with. Belichick, Brady, we're not best friends. They never went out to dinner in 20 years. And part of me thinks, Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, who says they have to be chummy? Who says they have to get along? But it was from go Hawks for 9 years to outspoken Russell Wilson. How surprised were you that he decided clearly 3 weeks ago, I'm going to shift this thing? Where I'm not going to just accept everything I'm told.
Yeah, I think that's the part that caught everybody off guard was Russell never really was seen as a guy who was willing to push the envelope publicly, right? It was go Hawks, it was team, it was leadership. Now, having been around him now and after for so long standing on the other side of the sideline and kind of having a perception of him and then being in the locker room with him, everything I viewed from across the field was verified and validated in my interactions with him personally. He is, I think I told you this when I saw you in LA a few weeks back, he is the most on person, meaning every day, all day, whether it's a walkthrough, a meeting, a March Zoom call while I'm on spring break with my wife and he texts me, hey, let's do a Zoom call. And I got to run up to the hotel and back in last March and do a Zoom call install. He is on every single moment of every day. So I think that perception and that within the building, they were so used to that. I don't want to say they took it for granted, but I think all of a sudden now publicly, he's all of a sudden saying, hey, I need these things. This is what I need to become what the player I strive to be. And I think everybody was like, how dare Russell speak out? How dare Russell speak out? And he has every right to say what he feels he needs to be the player and to be at the Tom Brady level, the Peyton Manning level. I know that's what he strives to be. That's how he views himself. And right now he knows his career, you know, he's almost at double digits now.
Yeah.
And he can say what he wants about, I'm going to play 20. That sounds great. That's hard to guarantee. He knows he's in the meat of his career. His window of winning is now. And there's things that he knows he needs in order to achieve what he set out to achieve. And I don't blame him.
You know, Eric Mangini won 3 Super Bowls in New England. And he brought up a good point with Tom Brady. He said, you know, how you enter a team is often how you're viewed. And he goes, Tom Brady comes in, 6th-round pick, system guy, hand the ball off, win with defense. And then Tom grows and becomes a dad. And his net worth is $300 million. And he's got multiple Super Bowls. And now he's the greatest player ever. And in the end, the perception among some in New England is, hey, Tom takes pay cuts. Tom's a system guy. And Tom decided after that Atlanta Super Bowl, no, I'm the best player that's ever played the game. Similarly, Russell comes in, third round pick. Marshawn Lynch in defense wins the game. Go Hawks. And Eric said, it's very hard for teams to pivot. You know, you look at Brady as the pay cut guy, all about the team guy. And then he becomes the greatest football player ever. And Russell's third round, little short. You know, we need to have a big running game. And your thoughts on that about as he transformed his career, you know, maybe Pete still views him as the guy he wants under his thumb. And Russell's now a top 3-4 quarterback on the planet.
He is. And I think that right there is the divide, right? I think the Russell Wilson we all met the first Super Bowl in year two, the kid who went into the training camp and everyone was shocked he beat out Matt Flynn for the job, right? Here's this kid who we knew was a good college player, kind of mid-round pick, and all of a sudden now he beat out the, you know, remember they gave Matt Flynn like $1 billion to be their quarterback, yeah. And then they didn't even start him day one, right? He took that organization by storm, but he knows, we all know, whether it's true or not, the perception of that early Super Bowl team was the defense, the Legion of Boom, these guys, right? Now, that offense, he did some good work. He made a lot of plays. I saw it firsthand. But that's the perception. Russ knows that if he wants to enter into that category that I believe he is already in, he needs to win more Super Bowls. And he needs to now, it's not the Legion of Boom. It's not the days of old, where now he wants that weight on his shoulders. He wants it to be an offensively driven philosophy and team. Are they willing to allow him to operate the Seattle Seahawks in that manner? I think that's the crossroads they're at right now. And after being there a year, I'm not exactly sure which path they take. I think he is such a unique player. And I always had such an incredible match. It's why I went there, right? That was the reason why I picked Seattle, was to go play with him and be around him and see what he was like. He's the most professional, high-level guy maybe I've ever been a part of, regardless of position. But his legacy matters to him, and I don't blame him. He's a one-time Super Bowl champ, one-time Super Bowl loser. That matters to him. He wants to win 3-4 multiple Super Bowls, and he wants it to be on his back because that's the type of competitor that he is. Will the Seattle Seahawks ever just say, here are the keys, go win us the Super Bowl offensively? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, Earl Thomas spoke out. Richard Sherman spoke out. Pete Carroll got rid of him. He has a history. I mean, there's a reality with Pete Carroll. He plays football the way he coaches football the way he wants to coach football.
And I don't blame him. The guy's, he's one of the most impressive people running an organization I've ever been around. That doesn't mean I agree with everything, disagree. He runs a football team incredibly efficient, attention to detail, situations, coaching. His team meeting is 35 minutes and you sit there the entire time on the edge of your seat because it's not just wasted fluff. So I get it. Both guys know that they're capable of being amongst the all-time best. They just have a little bit of different philosophy on how it's done.
Well, it's interesting. Let's go back to the tension thing, that you don't always have to get along with everybody you play with. Cam and Ron Rivera, probably there was tension over the course of time. Brady Belichick, I mean, did you ever have teammates? I mean, God, you can't be in a locker room with 55 alphas and get along with everybody. Did every team you were on, were there ever issues in the locker room, but you still won?
Of course. I think that's the NFL, right? I don't think anyone expects the NFL to be 53 players and 20 coaches and everybody every day gets along, loves each other, never has an argument. I think if you create that environment, you never challenge yourselves. You never challenge each other. There's no accountability. There's no standard to hold anybody to. If everything's all hunky-dory, I don't think anybody thrives in those situations. I think people want to be challenged. I think people need to be held accountable. Players, coaches, within players, within coaching. I think those are the organizations, but doing it respectfully, doing it in a manner in which it's not going to become counterproductive to the overall mission of the team. Me and Cam Newton have gotten into it in the middle of games about what he saw, what I saw. Cam's one of my most loved teammates that I've ever had in my whole career. We'll keep in touch the rest of our lives. Does that mean every single game he loved every route I ran, that I saw every ball he threw the way his eyes saw it, that I thought, no, of course not. That's anytime you get a bunch of highly competitive individuals in one team or one company or one organization, whatever it is, it's not only sports. not only is there going to be conflict, you need conflict. You need people to challenge each other to find the right solution so everyone can move forward and become better.
It's funny you mentioned Cam. He's still actually very young, but his body, like Big Ben, is older because, you know, like when you're built like Cam or Big Ben, I think it's just very natural that you can, in high school and college, you just took more hits. Guys bounced off you. You get to the NFL, and the accumulation of 6 and 7 and 8 years, you get dinged. And those are hard miles on your body. You know, I look at Cam, and my theory has always been, come back New England second year, go on the market, get New England can't draft a receiver, get Allen Robinson, go draft Kyle Pitts, a wide receiver, bring Cam back, the defense will be good, and then you got a playoff team again. Do you think, I mean, you were around Russell Wilson, who is uniquely driven, like almost, you know, obsessed. I always felt like Cam loved football. I never felt necessarily he was obsessed, or is he?
He is. Him and Russ are very similar, yet very different at the exact same time. They're different styles, both on the field and off. They have very different interests, very different motivations, yet at the same time, having been around them both, obviously a lot longer with Cam than I was with Russ, so often I would find myself saying, like, these guys overlap a lot more than maybe they would even admit, or maybe anyone really even realizes. They are highly, highly, highly competitive, driven, internally driven players. There's a lot of guys that are driven out of fear of failure, fear of criticism, fear of coaches, fear of being benched. That's neither Cam nor Russ. They are driven by their own expectations that they've set out for themselves that are further than anything you could say on air, I could say as a teammate, Ron Rivera, Pete Carroll. There's nothing any of those guys are going to set as an expectation bar that is going to be able to surpass what they set individually. I think that right there, though, sometimes catches a little people off guard because they misconceive it as being selfish. They can see that, oh, they're only worried about themselves. They're not, but they realize that the better they are, everybody else around me becomes better. So yeah, I'm worried about myself. I am worried about my legacy and my career and my, because if I have a great career and I'm a Hall of Fame quarterback, all you guys around me and this team is going to be better as a result. That's how they process their competitive nature while being different individuals and different styles. They share that unique bond.
You know, it's interesting with Russell Wilson. I theorized this. He listed 4 teams he would go to. You played in Chicago, which is, you know, it's such a tough guy town, and he's such a flashy player. It would be an interesting fit. Dallas, I think he fits. New Orleans, even Las Vegas. Chicago, Chicago, it's just, it's Buffalo with more buildings. They take great pride in tough. You were there. Like, it is a deep embedded passion for their sports. They probably can't even understand people like me that live in Southern California. They don't even get, you know, it's like, dude, we wear our jerseys. Did you like playing there? Do you think Russ fits there with his style and their history?
I think Chicago would lose their minds if they woke up one day and they traded for Russell Wilson. Again, I think that's pie in the sky. I don't think Seattle, you can't take those odds. If you're taking the odds today, he's back in Seattle. They fix the things that they both agree on that need to get better to push the organization forward. We won 12 games last year, right? I think people take, we lost in the first round of the playoffs. We lost to LA and, you know, they didn't have their quarterback, all that. So I think this season, at the end of the day, no one has won more games than Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks to start a guy's career, right? So success there has also made them a little, you know, it's almost spoiled them a little bit. If they don't win the Super Bowl, it's a massive failure. Yes. But at most organizations, they'd cut off their leg to win 12 games a year, right? So I think they're lucky in that regard. They've set such a high mark that it's Super Bowl or bust, which is awesome. But back to Chicago, again, they made the Cutler trade when I was there back in 2009. The 2009 offseason, they got Cutler, and the city was going to have a parade, right? This was our first quarterback we've had, you know, Sid Luckman. It didn't really go according to plan. We did make the one NFC championship. Cutler didn't get enough credit for how good of a player he was and how far he took that team. And even the years after I got traded, He was one of the best players in the league that year until he broke his thumb trying to make a tackle after a fumble or something. So, like, he didn't get enough credit. If Russell Wilson goes there, the city's going to light itself. I don't know what they would do. They're going to lose their minds. I mean, I think they would give up anything as a city to have a player like him.
Did it feel different playing in Chicago than, I'm not saying Seattle and Carolina don't have passionate fans, but did it feel different on the field playing the Packers at Soldier Field?
Yeah, it felt a little more like college. You know, it felt a little more like a college environment where those people in that, you know, college town, Athens, Georgia, Tuscaloosa, Tallahassee, like that day, that Sunday afternoon at Soldier Field was the day of the week. It didn't matter if the Cubs were doing anything, the Blackhawks were doing anything. They loved their other teams, but it was a Bears town. And when the Bears were playing, the environment, the energy, like you said, everyone's got their jerseys, throwbacks, Ditka jerseys, Singletary, the history. It's different. There's no casual nature to that stadium. There's nothing casual. I remember it being as a rookie. And again, I came from Miami where we had good fans. We had rabid fans, but it wasn't like your typical college town, right? So I get there as a rookie and I would have moms, older ladies in the supermarket. Just the things they would say to you after a tough game, a good game, a loss. I would go home to my wife. I was like, these people here are crazy about the team and almost like delusional. It's an unbelievable place to play. I loved it. I was pissed off as hell when I got traded from there. I mean, I was beside myself. I'm like, I'm getting traded from the Chicago Bears. We just played in the NFC Championship in one of the coolest cities in the world. And I'm going to Charlotte, North Carolina. They won 2 games last year. We've been on a lockout. They haven't met their quarterback. He was played 1 year in college. They just hired Ron Rivera. And then lo and behold, it became the best thing that ever happened to me, right? But like at the time, no, I didn't want to leave Chicago at all. I was furious with Mike Martz and Jerry Angelo. I was pissed.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I always tell my audience, what if I got traded to the Vice Network or yeah. I got traded to Nickelodeon? Like yeah. People don't understand. You're disrupting my life. My kids are in school. My wife has a social circle. So I've always said yeah. fans just don't quite understand the reality of your career where you can be in love with a city, in love with a team, and you get a call from what, your agent?
Yeah. I just brought my first son home to our house, to his nursery. I painted it on the bye week the previous year during the playoffs. We got a bye, painted his nursery, got it all ready. My wife and I brought our kid home 6 weeks before I went to training camp and got traded. So then here we are bringing our kid home thinking Chicago is going to be home. We're going to raise our children here, whatnot. 6 weeks later, leave my house, never step foot. My wife flies back there, sells it. I never step foot back in my house, fly to Charlotte, never went home again. Just literally in 12 hours.
That is crazy. Greg Olson on the Colin Cowherd podcast joining us. It is, you know, it's funny about tight ends. When you entered the league, I mean, half the tight ends were blocking tight ends. And then there's guys that clearly can go vertical, Travis Kelce, Jimmy Graham. Did you ever feel like in your career, it's like, why are we like the second lowest paid unit? Like Tony Gonzalez always said, how do I get 80 catches and 9 touchdowns and I make less than our second receiver? Like, I don't get it. Is there a club, a tight end club, where you guys would grumble about that?
So it's actually funny you say that. I did a limited podcast series last year called TE1 where I interviewed tight ends, starting with Mike Ditka all the way through Kelce and George Kittle and Cole Kmet actually in Chicago. And we kind of chronicled the evolution of the tight end position. It was really interesting. When I talked to Tony, my theory about what you just said is it was because of Tony Gonzalez being so dominant for so long. He was the market. And there was no ability for anyone to ever be paid more than Tony Gonzalez, because that would be crazy. And then how does Tony Gonzalez negotiate his new contract against only himself? Because there's never anyone jumping him. And then when you remember the old drafts, very few tight ends. You know, you had Vernon Davis, you had Kellen Winslow. There was very few tight ends taken top 5, top 10 to artificially reset the market with their rookie contracts. So Tony was the market for a decade. You know, it wasn't until the Wittens of the world and Gates and these guys started coming and grew the amount of high-level tight ends. But I blame Tony. And I told him to his face, I said, Tony, you're the reason none of us make any money. It wasn't until Kittle and Kelce They've now reset the market finally. But again, that was through competition. That was because all of a sudden you got Hooper going to Cleveland as a free agent from Atlanta making $11 million. And then Kittle and Kelce are sitting around going, wait a minute, we got like 1,200 yards a year. If he makes 11, they got 15 or 16 or whatever it is. And finally, after what seemed like since Gronk's deal 10 years ago, the market finally got reset.
Greg Olson joining us. If I'm going to say, I'm going to list a quality and you tell me the tight end that was best at it. Blocking. Yeah. Blocking.
Like ever?
Yeah. Tight end. Blocking.
Probably of like the modern age of all the top guys, Gronkowski.
Hands.
Me. I'm taking me.
Athlete.
Kittle. Kelce.
Deceptiveness. Tricky. Clever.
Witten.
Yeah, he is, isn't he?
He for a guy that he, I mean, again, when he was in his prime, he was probably the best ever. I get into guys' arguments all the time. If he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, the whole thing's screwed up.
What is it with him? Why? Why was he so good?
The guy is just crafty. So when you said deceptiveness, he's the first name that popped in. He never ran 4.5. He never vertical jumped 40 inches. He was just a solid all-round, smart, tough, every play, run, pass, throwing the ball, short yardage. It didn't matter. He was in the game. He was going to do everything asked to the position, and he was always open. He had a great rapport with Romo all those years. They trusted each other. He ran that damn sticky option at 10 yards, and it seemed like everyone knew he was going to run it, and no one could guard him. So he to me, his ability to get open and be creative and be crafty for a guy that didn't run 4.5, he was always a guy from afar I always studied because I feel like he really understood the art of getting open versus just running around.
He went football, TV, back to football. If Tom Brady called you tomorrow and said, come down here for a year, it's warm, it won't hurt, our practices are light, would you consider it?
I don't think so. I actually talked to Tom a little bit last year when I was making my decision and the timing just didn't work out, you know, with when I had to sign and when he was going to sign. He's obviously a guy you would die to play for. I'm done. You know, I just felt like I got it all out of my system this year. Physically, I can't do what I really want to be able to do. If I wanted to play another year, I know a team would pay me something to be on their roster this year, and I could get in the game and do something. I'm not willing to be a guy who collects a check to not be able to do what I've done for a long time, and that's the only level I'm willing to play at. I could play at 80% of my career and be in the running and be solid and play 25, 30 snaps a game and be better than a lot of the guys in the league. I know I could be that. I'm not willing to be that guy. And last year's experience and the way things worked out, like it just took it all out of me. And I'm content with my career. Obviously I never won a Super Bowl. That was really the only thing left to check. And I feel like I maximized every opportunity I had. And to me, that's all you can do.
You know, years ago, Charles Barkley said he played football for one game and got hit and said, this is no fun. I don't like being tackled. LeBron James recently said in 2011 during the lockout, 2011 NBA lockout, he was an all-state receiver in Ohio, that LeBron did consider getting in football shape and playing. And I mean, he's such a remarkable athlete in the red zone. He'd be a tough matchup on that fade to the corner. But like, describe if you can the physicality of the NFL. I've talked to players about this. They just, what you just don't understand the physicality. First of all, do you think LeBron would be successful long term? Let's start with that. Do you think he would be?
You know, long term, I think is where it gets into a question mark. Could he have come out and played a season and just been such a physical athlete that he could have figured it out? I do believe he could have, right? I think we've seen that for guys to make transitions into a different sport at a high level, it seems to be transitioning to football is the only one that ever even has a few stories that tend to work out, right? You don't ever hear the retired football player all of a sudden going to being a point guard or go being the starting shortstop. It doesn't usually work that way because it's more of a macro sport. Right. It's more macro dynamic, physical traits to be a football player versus the skill. I think physically and athletically, he would be off the charts. Do I think he could long-term deal with the... Could he play wide out in the NFL? Yes, I do believe. Could he play tight end in the NFL? No. I think I'm not sure LeBron knows really what that means. If I could coach LeBron James for 1 year, I could make him an all-pro wide receiver. There's no question in my mind. I could turn Russell Westbrook into an all-pro free safety. There's a handful of those guys that could make the transition just because they are so unique. But there's few and far between those guys. But yes, I do think he could play NFL wide receiver. For how long? I think he'd be stupid to stop playing basketball. But yes, I do think he could in the short term. Yes, I do.
But tight end is different. You're often blocking an elite edge rusher. Take me to the physical duress. Take me to a Monday after you had a physical football game. What did you feel like?
When I first knew what NFL tight end was going to be, in college, we ran a traditional NFL type offense. So tight end in Miami, our hand was in the dirt. It was, you know, again, this was 15 years ago. There was it wasn't spread. We were under center. We were running a traditional passing game, traditional running game. So I thought I really knew what tight end meant. I blocked. Yeah, I ran routes, you know, whatever. My rookie year, 2007, we're playing a home game in Chicago against Strahan and the Giants. And we would have some personnel groupings. We had some other blockers that were like older veterans. I was a rookie. And we had a third and short, and we just ran like a true, like, I backfield, like power run to the right. And I got Strahan on my nose. I'm down in a 3-point stance and I'm telling myself, you got to come off the ball harder than you've ever come off the ball in your life and strike this dude, or he's going to drive you backwards. So I jump the snap count. I take two steps and I try to strike him. I could picture it in my head. He comes off kind of slow. He takes his left hand, puts it in my right shoulder, brings me back into the fullback, into the guard, into the ball carrier. We get stopped and we have to punt. And I ran off the field and I was like, if I got to block guys like that, I'm not going to last much longer here. Right? Like, that was my first realization that these guys are just different. When I first came in the league, each team might've had like one guy who you're like, all right, if we're lining up over Michael Strahan, we got to be here. We got to have two guys. If we're lining up over Javon Kearse or whoever. Now, my last couple of years, every team had two or three of those just absolute freaks. You might not have even heard of their names, and they'd come out, their arms would be 8 feet wingspan, muscles in places I don't have muscles. They're 6'6", they're 290, and their waists are this big. The evolution of the defensive linemen in the NFL made playing tight end significantly more challenging as my career went on. The passing game got easier just because passing games got a lot more spread out, a lot more multiple. It was a lot easier to play tight end as a receiver. The physicality of the position became a lot more challenging because of the quality of the guys you were going against as the years went on.
Yeah, and that's where I think LeBron doesn't quite understand. I think he could be a great receiver. I've talked to so many players about this. I mean, you played at 250, didn't you?
Yeah, and I was small.
The idea that somebody could grab you. I mean, if you're in a room with other men, you're the biggest man, and somebody could grab you and throw you back. Who was physically the strongest player in your NFL career?
James Harrison. I've told this story before. Like, the difference with James Harrison was he was like 5'10". Right. So I was 6'5", skinny, high waist. He's like a 5'10 fire hydrant. Right. And he would play that outside linebacker position in Pittsburgh. And his job was to set the edge. Right. Nothing gets outside me. Set the edge. Everyone funnels in. And I remember those couple years trying to get ready to block him. And like, he would put his helmet right under your throat. And I told this one story on air. I forget whose show I was on. And like, he literally made me throw up. Like, he hit me so hard in the throat with the front of his helmet that like I threw up in my mouth in the middle of the play. And like, there you are fighting with everything you got. And this guy is just like squatting down and just like, just unleashing It's hard to describe, but like going into blocking a guy like that, you're like, I really hope there's not a lot of front side point of attacks because this guy's a different animal, you know? And it just seemed like as the years went on, every game I would prep for, there was a guy like that. There was a guy like that. There was two guys like that. And it's just, and in Carolina, I didn't come off the field. You know, I didn't get to just come in for the passes. I didn't get to just play slot. You know, I had a lineup with my hand on the ground in a team that was going to run the ball at you with our quarterback, D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart, Christian McCaffrey. We were going to run the ball at you. And then everything else with Cam would come from that. If you couldn't get in there and put your face on people and strike and get knocked down and get back up, and you couldn't play tight end in our offense. So I had no choice. It wasn't always great. I wasn't always the best blocker. But the thing I always knew was there was only three or four guys in the league that were asked to do what I did. And not everyone could have played in our system. And there was no system in my prime that I couldn't have played in. And that's what I always went to bed feeling good about what I was doing, because I knew that to be true.
Greg Olson, full of good stuff. So what are you doing to prepare for the big Fox broadcasting career? You studying all day or something?
Studying all day. I just listen to your shows. I just listen to your insight, and I just try
to copy. That's a bunch of nonsense.
I've been fortunate. You know, you and I have actually talked a lot about this through this whole last couple of years of kind of balancing this transition. I've had a lot of unique opportunities before retirement to call games, to do production meetings, to be at, you know, to be in studio production meetings and be on in studio on set. That a lot of guys, when they retire, that's now their big, you know, they kind of get that ball in motion and they're doing games behind the scenes and they're calling past broadcasts and they're trying to do simulated, you know, production meetings. I have a lot of work to do now moving into a full-time slate, but the part that allows me to have a little peace of mind is I've been in the fire a little bit. I've called multiple NFL games. I've done multiple major network auditions behind the scenes, calling games for studio executives. Last year, me and Burkhart called five of the XFL games week after week after week, which was 1,000 times more challenging than calling the NFL because you didn't know anybody's name.
Right.
Right. So like I've had a lot of opportunities as a current player to prep. Now that I'm going to go full time into this in the fall, through the summer, I'll get more games. I'll hire a local play-by-play guy that I know from the team to do some more mock broadcasts and kind of flush out the seams. But I feel like I'm starting from a good place that I don't have to learn everything between now and September.
Can't wait. You're one of the good guys, man. Going to have you on again. Appreciate it. Great family. And we'll talk soon. Appreciate it.
Enjoy the hotel.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Good All talking, right, man.
All right, thanks, everybody. You know the drill. At The Volume Sports on Twitter and Instagram. Rate, review, subscribe. We love that you're listening. And we're just starting, man. We're about 5-6 weeks old. Our little pirate ship is growing. Big announcement later today. We're adding a member, somebody I have admired and known for a long time, an expert in his field, will be joining The Volume Sports. Announcement later today.
Volume.